Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose.
Cutting down to the truth through history and experience. The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bone's Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge. Email kfr at scalpeledge.com or the website scalpeledge.com.
The next episode of The Scalpel starts now.
Welcome to The Scalpel. This is Dr. Keith Rose. When I worked overseas in Afghanistan, Pakistan, I also spent time in Africa, some of the really nice garden spots like Somalia, Sudan. I was in Nigeria for a while. I was in several countries, Kenya. And then I worked in Central and South America in my life, and I've worked a lot of different places. And I was asked one time by a friend, he said, when you go to these places, how do you figure out if something bad is about to happen? He said, you travel to so many countries, how can you know when something nefarious could take place if you haven't spent a lot of time, or if you have spent a lot of time, but how do you remember? It was interesting. I'd never been asked that question before. I thought about it, and then I just basically said, well, I don't really have to know what's abnormal or every bad thing that can happen. I just need to know what normal looks like wherever I am. All I have to do is when I go into a village, say in Afghanistan, I just need to know what's normal. Are there kids playing in the street? Are there people, ladies working out in a field wearing colorful clothes? Are elderly men standing near the beginning, as you will come into the village, under some shade, talking, having normal conversation? Is there a normal ebb and flow? And it's important to know what normal is, because when you don't see normal, you don't have to know all the bad things that can happen. But at least it prepares you to be careful, to be cautious, to look deeper. Right now in our nation, I believe we've forgotten what normal looks like. And the only way we're going to get back to that is what I would like to call the courage of hope. It's the only way we're going to save our nation. Now, I know President Barack Obama wrote a book for him called The Audacity of Hope. But I believe at this time in 2021, it takes the courage of hope to save this nation, because whatever you want to think, if you pass through this nation today and you come from, say, 2-3 years ago and you come back here, you're going to say, this is not normal. I mean, so far, this entire presidency of asterisk President Joe Biden, to me, it's like being tied to a chair and watching a toddler play with a loaded gun. And you never know what's going to happen. And after Joe Biden spoke to Congress last week, the response to that by Senator Tim Scott shined a very bright light on the hypocrisy and extreme agenda of Biden and the Democrat Party. And because Senator Scott is a black Christian, he was ridiculed as an Uncle Tom. While Senator Scott said America is not a racist country, he also exposed a racist political party, the Democrat Party. And in the spirit of Jim Crow laws instituted solely by the Democrat Party after the Civil War and continue to oppress black people even to this day, the Democrats and leftists who call everybody else racist attacked Senator Scott for his offering a truthful counterbalance to the extremism of Biden and his buddies and their use of race as a political weapon. Scott exposed the multi-trillion dollar Democratic plans for just what they are. Extreme leftist programs designed to turn this country into a socialist utopia, or socialism, which is anything but utopia, and more like a hell on earth. These programs are deceptively named the American Rescue Plan, the American Jobs Plan, the American Families Plan, and so forth. None of them are about their titles, though, but rather about expanding the reach of government and lining the pockets of freeloaders, and I would say supporters of the Democrat Party. So they will support the politicians advocating this redistribution of your hard-earned cash. And if you disagree with these people, you may as well be dead. I'm talking about the visceral expressed emotions by leftist politicians, left-leaning corporate bosses, and Hollywood elites. There has been no better example of their hate and racism than what they have been saying about Senator Scott since his rebuttal to President Biden. In his rebuttal, Senator Scott spoke the truth. He attacked the divisive Democratic Party and leftist race narrative. He said, "Nowhere do we need common ground more desperately than in our discussions of race. I have experienced the pain of discrimination. I know what it feels like to be pulled over for no reason, to be followed around the store while I'm shopping. From colleges to corporations to our culture, people are making money and gaining power by pretending we haven't made any progress at all. By doubling down on the divisions we've worked so hard to heal. You know this stuff is wrong. Hear me clearly. America is not a racist country. It's backwards to fight discrimination with different types of discrimination, and it's wrong to try to use our painful past to dishonestly shut down debates in the present." Those words spoken by Senator Scott were powerful. They were truth. And his honesty showed us the courage it took to have hope for the future. A man that had been discriminated against, a man that understands discrimination, but also understands the truth and had the courage to say it, that America is not a systemically racist nation. And Senator Scott predicted exactly what would happen in the wake of his rebuttal. He said, "I get called Uncle Tom and the N-word by progressive liberals. Just last week, a national newspaper suggested my family's poverty was actually privilege because a relative owned land generations before my time. Believe me, I know firsthand our healing is not finished." But since his speech, he was labeled Uncle Tim on social media. Politicians and others like Jesse Jackson, who I just like to call poverty pimps, who make a lot of money pretending no progress has been made, criticizing the speech, saying it was an inherent contradiction and sick. Let me tell you, racism is a hard issue. And those who would hypocritically weaponize race are like those described in Jeremiah 17:9. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Well, we know it when it exposes itself, as these people have by attacking Senator Scott. And Senator Scott knew he was going to get attacked, yet he spoke the truth. He knew people would come at him and call him names, but he had the courage of hope. Because Senator Scott stood because he believes in saving this nation, and he knows the only way we're going to save it is to have courage and to speak truth. And today we need to understand that. We need to understand that we are in the majority to save this nation, not the minority. We may not have the loudest megaphone. We may be digitally whitewashed, but true Americans can stand and have the courage of hope. A gentleman by the name of Wilford McClay who is a professor in history of liberty at the University of Oklahoma, delivered a speech at Hillsdale College back in 2019. I believe it was the summer of 2019. And Dr. McClay had brilliant insights into what is going on and how we got here. But as he spoke, he not only explained what was happening, but he brought in examples in history that can give us the courage of hope. When he spoke to those folks at Hillsdale College, he talked about the fact that he had written a book called The Student's Guide to U.S. History and Land of Hope, An Invitation to the Great American Story. He went on to talk about this book, and he said he was unable to include in the bibliography of this book any current high school or college level textbooks on U.S. history because there wasn't one suitable for recommendation. But criticism of the status quo is easy, he spoke about. He said, what is harder is to create a better alternative, or as I like to say, give someone the courage of hope. He went on to say that it was his aim in writing Land of Hope, An Invitation to the Great American Story. Land of Hope swims against the prevailing currents in several ways, not the least of which is that it's a physical book, and that it's no coincidence that the giant textbook publisher Pearson had just announced its plan to go digital first with its own massive array of textbooks, 1,500 titles in all, including those in history. Students will eventually be required to use those, and institutions will be required to offer them and constantly update the text, tethering the students and schools exclusively to the publisher's digital platform. George Orwell, please call the Ministry of Truth. But in the early years of printing, printers would often display a truncated version of a Latin proverb, littera scripta manet, which means the written letter remains. Dr. McClay, went on to say, though, that in the whole proverb reads, vos arieta, and I'm probably saying this wrong, periet littera scripta manet, which can be translated, the heard voice perishes, but the written letter remains. It contrasts the fleeting orality and settled literacy. So what does such a proverb mean today when our civilization, which the great majority of inhabitants as Christians and Jews have been people of the book? It's fast becoming a civilization inhabited by people of the screen. People tied to the ever-changing, ever-fluid, ever-malleable presentation of the past made possible by the nature of digital technology. And his book, The Land of Hope, goes against the current, not by dumbing down the reading level. And it's written with an underlying conviction that we should never sell short the capacity of young Americans, and I would say any Americans, to read challenging books if they are interested and well-wrought. Such books are far more likely to stoke the fire of their imaginations and convey to them the complexity and excitement of history, because history is not an inert recitation of facts, but as a reflective task that it takes us to the depths of what it means to be human. I'd encourage you to read Dr. McClay's book. But in this talk, he went on to talk about an epitaph that was, or an epigraph that was put in his book. And it was written by John Dos Passos, a man of radical left in his youth, who later moved to the sensible right. And it was written in 1941 essay called Use of the Past. And don't fade on me here, because this matters. Because John Dos Passos said, every generation rewrites the past. In easy times, history is more or less of an ornamental art, but in times of danger, we are driven to the written record by a pressing need to find answers to the riddles of today. We need to know what kind of firm ground other men belonging to generations before us have found to stand on. In spite of the changing conditions of life, they were not very different from ourselves. Their thoughts were their grandfathers of our thoughts. They managed to meet situations as difficult and those we have to face, to meet them sometimes lightheartedly and in some measure to make their hopes prevail. I just add to have the courage of hope. We need to know they did it. In times of change and danger, when there is a quicksand of fear under men's reasoning and a sense of continuity with generations gone before can stretch like a lifeline across the scary present and get us past that idiot delusion of the exceptional now that blocks good thinking. That is why in times like ours, when old institutions are caving in and being replaced by new institutions, not necessarily in accord with most men's preconceived hopes, political thought has to look backwards as well as forwards. Now, I'm going to unpack that for you right now because that's what we talk about today. You have to look back to move forward. History matters. I love the way he wrote, the sense of continuity with generations gone before can stretch like a lifeline across the scary present. How applicable is that today? When we're treating certain things today like we never have before, it's like traveling through a village where you know what normal is, yet you're not seeing it anywhere. But you have to have the courage of hope to call it out. You have to say, that's not normal, that's not right, because I know what normal looks like. I love his rather rough denunciation of that idiot delusion of the exceptional now, because what phrase encompasses so much of where we stand today in the United States of America with a Democrat radical left party with idiot delusions of the exceptional now? How many times have you heard that's not who we are as Americans? But Dr. McClay points out it is a childish and disabling illusion that must be countered in just the way that Dos Passos suggests. Even in confronting the challenging questions of American history, most notably the existence of slavery, there are deep lessons to be learned. And he goes on to talk about several things that we've talked about before. Why there was slavery and understanding the true history and how we got to where we are today with the greatest, freest country in the world. He talks about how slavery, the ambivalences regarding slavery built into the structure of the Constitution were almost certainly unavoidable in the short term, as our founders wrote about. But they knew that it was wrong. And it had to go away. Part of the study of history involves a training of the imagination, learning to see historical actors as speaking and acting in their own times rather than ours, and learning to see even our heroes as all too human mixture of admirable and unadmirable qualities. Because people like us, who may be constrained by circumstances beyond their control, I love the way Dr. McClay talked, because he spoke and he brought history to life, and that's what we have to do if we're going to have hope in this nation. We have to give context to what happened in the past in order to move forward in the future, and that context is what Senator Scott understood and why he said, while we have had racism in the past in this nation, we don't have systemic racism here today. It's that kind of courage. It's that kind of leader that will give us hope in this nation. And we don't have to look very far to the past to understand that it's happened before. A related lesson of history is that acts of statesmanship often require courage and imagination, even daring, especially when the outcome seems doubtful. I spoke to you about Senator Tim Scott and his rebuttal to President Joe Biden, but take the case of Abraham Lincoln. We're so accustomed as to thinking of Lincoln in heroic terms that we forget the depth and breadth of his unpopularity during his entire time in office. Few great leaders have been more comprehensively disdained, loathed, and underestimated. A low Southern view of him, of course, was to be expected, but it was widely shared in the North as well. As Lincoln biographer David Donald put it, Lincoln's own associates thought of him a simple Susan, a baboon, an aimless punster, a smutty joker. Abolitionist Wendell Phillips called him a huckster in politics, a first-rate, second-rate man. George McClellan, his opponent in the 1864 election, openly disdained him as a well-meaning baboon. And for much of that election year, Lincoln was convinced with good reason that he was doomed to lose the election, with the incalculable consequences for the war effort and the future of the nation. And to quote McClay's book again, we need to remember that this is generally how history happens. It is not like a Hollywood movie in which the background music swells and the crowd in the room applauds and leaps to his feet as the orator dispenses timeless words and the camera pans the room full of smiling faces. In real history, the background music does not swell, the trumpets do not sound, and the carping critics often seem louder than the applause. The leader or soldier has to wonder whether he is acting in vain, whether the criticisms of others are in fact true, whether time will judge him harshly, whether his sacrifice will count for anything. Few great leaders have felt this burden more completely than Abraham Lincoln. But Abraham Lincoln had the courage of hope. And it was that courage that saw an end to the Civil War. And it's that courage that we have seen in leaders today. We've seen that courage in Senator Scott. We've seen that courage in President Trump. We've seen that courage in General Flynn. We've seen that courage in a few that have stood for truth while they're being mocked, and some by their own party. But they understand they have to have courage to give hope to the nation. They have to have courage because 244 years ago, 56 men publicly declared their commitment to self-evident truths that form the foundation of our nation, which has continued to be a beacon of hope for all people around the world who yearn to be free and live free. They have to have that courage. That's why over 1 million people a year try to come to this country. They have to have courage to speak to truth. To the radical left that says people only come here because the Western society has destroyed their nation. No, they come here for hope. For the courage of hope to live free because they know that this nation hasn't been destroyed yet. As a beacon of freedom, but I can tell you right now, the radical left is working pretty hard to destroy it. Because if you look up the word honor as a verb, it's to fulfill, observe, keep, obey, heed, to be true to live up to. That's why our founders pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. But honor can also be used as a noun, nobility, esteemed importance, and prestige. And men who use honor as a noun to talk about themselves have foregone self-evident truth for self-interest cause. Or what I like to call self-interest truth or relative truth. They no longer create a country where people travel to be free, but where people invade for free stuff. The final sentence of the Declaration of Independence is a promise among the signers to mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortune, and our sacred honor. And many did sacrifice their lives and fortunes in service to our country. So how is it that we've gone a scant 244 years, which is one of the youngest nations in the world, to where honor is now a noun and leaders sacrifice their integrity and word for the title of your honor to obtain a fortune? I mean, it took a credible amount of courage to sign the Declaration of Independence. So where is that courage today? And where has it gone? Is it extinct in the pop culture of moral relevancy and flexible integrity? But where are the true leaders that will restore our nation to prominence and honor? I believe they're out there. I believe they have that courage, the courage of hope in a nation. Now, our current politicians want to be honored by title and obscure any real accomplishments with well-placed and costly brand management of their, quote, intent for the little people, where brand is king but crown is paper. I mean, who cares if the emperor has no clothes as long as he or she or whatever can buy enough marketing ads and co-op enough media into shaming those who see their stark nakedness covered with a thin veil of importance into stunned silence. Just look at our cancel culture. But our nation is the biggest loser in their own reality show, while our hollow, well-dressed, mannequin-like leaders are positioned by legions of lobbyists, corporatists, and foreign actors in the storefront of our republic in a buy one, get my soul for free sale. So what are we creating as a society? What can give us hope? Because we have a lot of activity now without a lot of productivity. The way we turn around is to understand we have to have the courage of hope. This nation was not built on dependence, but rugged independence. Dependence leads to slavery and tyranny. Independence leads to freedom. And this is how our nation was founded, by men who pledged their lives, their fortune, and their sacred honor as a down payment on the greatest nation in the history of the world. These dependable leaders put in time and scholarship by studying history, as Dr. McClay talked about, and experienced to give us the most dependable document the world has ever seen, the Constitution of the United States of America. So how can we have the courage of hope? Well, we have to understand mature patience versus impulsive action, because kids are impulsive, liberals are impulsive, but as mature, we should shift from the point of self-interest or because it's a, quote, good cause to the principled view of looking at issues from a moral and virtuous view, because that's what our founders did if you look back at history. Our founders had a strong faith, they had principles, and they understood that's what gave them freedom. And they had integrity, and it's something we're not seeing right now. What we're seeing right now is more of a scientific totalitarianism. I mean, that's the background music that's playing right now in Anthony Fauci's brilliant and long-lasting Ponzi scheme. A so-called liberal democracy like America demands a covert form of scientific totalitarianism that doesn't scare the horses of oversight and public opinion. And Fauci knew how to manipulate the levers of institutional power and image making in ways that I think Bernie Madoff would probably be pretty envious. And for a scientific Ponzi scheme to prevail in America and Europe, nobody must recognize that they have acquiesced to a major and scientific fraud. Doctors must follow protocols established by the COVID-19 Ponzi scheme, and patients must not question them. Sanctions should stand at the ready if they do. Nobody must see the telltale signs of fraud, deceit, and censorship. And Fauci et al. Knew the tricks required to turn Ivy League educated journalists into servile puppets and perky stenographers. And a long list of these servile puppets journalists were chummy with Fauci and enabled his little Ponzi scheme. These folks should have a lot to answer for. Oswald Chambers said, "When we are young, a hurricane or thunderstorm appears very powerful. However, the strength of a rock is infinitely greater than a hurricane. The hurricane just makes more noise at the time." And we're going to have to be rocks with the courage of hope in order to change or order to save this nation. Because the reaction to COVID-19 can be defeated if we look back at history and we understand what normal is. So we can point out the fraud and the abnormality of the current situation. Sherry Tepper said, "Nothing limits intelligence more than ignorance. Nothing fosters ignorance more than one's own opinions. Nothing strengthens one's own opinions more than refusing to look at reality." And we have to have leadership, because leadership's first job is to define reality. And a true leader defines reality as the actual truth in order to lead and make something, i.e. this nation, great again. So we're going to have to speak truth. It's not going to be comfortable at times. It's certainly not going to be comfortable for you if you listen to this podcast, but I'm going to speak the truth. I'm going to speak the truth so you can understand why we are where we are as a nation. I mean, you could look back a long way in history and you could see the slow slide of the indoctrination of our schools, like Dr. McClay talked about, not teaching actual history. Or you could look at the most recent history, where the Epoch Times wrote a great article just the other day. The article is titled, "Evidence Reveals That Military Team Collaborated with Lab in City Where COVID-19 Pandemic Originated." That would be Wuhan, China. The article goes on to talk about the Chinese government, the Chinese Communist Party, and their military, and they mention a gentleman's name in there. The gentleman they mention is a gentleman by the name of Ka Wucheng. He's 58. He's a colonel and a top epidemiologist in the Chinese military. In fact, he served on the team as second in command to Major General Chen Wei, China's top biowarfare expert. Now, you may be asking yourself, why is he talking about China? We know that the virus came from there. We know that that's a problem. This is not shocking to us. Well, it's not as shocking as it should be, because the last podcast we talked about a gentleman by the name of Peter Daszak at EcoHealth Alliance. And if you look carefully, you can see that Peter Daszak at EcoHealth Alliance worked with Cao Wuchen. That's the same Cao that served on the team as second command to Major General Chen Wei, China's top biowarfare expert. And in a paper written, oddly enough, in EcoHealth in 2015 at a forum, it says, "Joint China-U.S. call for employing a transdisciplinary approach to emerging infectious diseases." And there were only a few Westerners listed as authors. And the last author, which is usually the person that has the most gravitas and to do with the paper, is a gentleman by the name of Peter Daszak. And oh, I'm sorry, Wucheng Cao, the number two person in the biowarfare division of the Chinese Communist Army, was at that meeting and on that paper with Peter Daszak. And what you see, if you dig deep enough, is that nothing limits intelligence more than ignorance, and nothing fosters ignorance more than one's own opinion. Nothing strengthens one's more opinion than refusing to look at reality, because we're hearing that the virus didn't come from China. And the person that said that, that led that group for the World Health Organization, was Peter Daszak. The same Peter Daszak that has worked multiple times with members of the Chinese military and their biowarfare department. This isn't speculation. This is what we define as reality based on the papers that I've pulled. And if we're going to have the courage of hope, we have to have the courage to point out that this is a problem. We have to have the courage to point out that COVID-19 was treated differently. It was abnormal the way we responded to it. Because never before have we tested asymptomatic people looking for something that's not there. Never before have we adopted a test for a disease based on someone's best guess of what the disease would be like. Because the test, the PCR test, was first developed in Germany. That was used by the World Health Organization. And as I've stated before, there was no standardization of the number of cycles. In fact, I think it was intentionally ignored or not talked about in order to have, I believe they said 40 cycles is what they need. And we all know now through multiple scientific studies that that will make a lot of people positive that aren't. I heard a brilliant doctor the other day describe it, a brilliant microbiologist, highly published around the world in Germany. I heard him interviewed, and he said, to understand how bad it is, you need to understand the difference between a penny and a dollar. He said, if you take a dollar and multiply it by another dollar, multiply it by two, you have $2. And then if you multiply it by three and so on, he said, in 20 minutes, you'll have $1 million. He said, if you take 1 cent and do the same thing, in 27 minutes, you'll have $1 million, just 7 more minutes. And he used that to explain the PCR test. He said, basically, when they should have been testing for a dollar, they were testing for a penny. So they were running it 27 times, so everything hit $1 million. So after 20 times, it's $1 million with $1. And after 20, greater than 20 times, then a penny can get to $1 million. And he used that because he said really it was the 20 cycle count that should have been the cutoff for the PCR test. Now, I know this is a little confusing. I'm just trying to make it a little more simple using someone else's example. But the bottom line is we were doing the PCR test at 35 and 40 cycles. And a lot of people showed positive that weren't. And I believe it was intentional. And I believe that more light needs to be shined on this. And the only way this is going to happen is if doctors speak out, if scientists speak out, and they're doing it. And they have the courage of hope. Because this doctor, fascinating man, and I'll try to publish this in his interview, in our show notes. He talked about the fact that he wasn't a Republican or Democrat. He actually was a citizen of Germany. But he said science matters and truth matters because he believes with what's going on with the vaccine and other things that we'll talk about in later podcasts, that it could cause more problems for the population here in the United States and the world. And it all goes back to one thing, and that's truth. Understanding history, understanding what's normal, because he said it. We're not treating COVID-19 like any other virus, and there's no reason we should be doing that. Which means we have a lot of people that are going to have a lot of explaining to do in the coming days ahead. Hang in there. We're going to bring more and more information to you, and we're going to try to couch it with some history too, because it's just as important, as Dr. McClay says, to look back in order to move forward, because our thoughts are just the grandchildren of the thoughts of our founders. And we are people of the book. We do have a strong faith. and we do believe in self-evident truth, not self-centered truth, not self-interest truth, and certainly not cultural truth. One leader stood up the other day, and that was Senator Scott, and I believe more leaders will stand. President Trump stood up for us, and that's why he was mocked, as was President Lincoln. But as history showed us, President Lincoln, while he was mocked by both his, quote, supporters and his detractors, has been shown to be one of the greatest men to ever live in history because he had the courage of hope in the face of overwhelming adversity. Go out and have a great day, and I hope to come back to you tomorrow. And I know this might have been a little deep, but it's really important to understand history in order to keep freedom rolling.
Head high, protest line, freedom scribbled on your sign. Headline, New York Times, standing on the edge of a revolution. Hey, hey, just obey your secret safe with the NSA. In God we trust, or the CIA, standing on the edge of a revolution.
Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose.
The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bones Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge, email kfr@scalpeledge.com, or the website scalpeledge.com.